PM deadline is 7, so I probably have to do, but I don't know if I have to do, no, I think someone's doing on day,
okay.
And then I'll be ashamed, but they're doing it from the office,
okay.
Anyway, you're probably very used
very
to this, but it's actually
I would like to welcome everybody who is here, responded to our call that today we are going to conduct public hearings. We're starting a very important and a serious process as this portfolio committee. A process that deals with matters of life and death for South Africans, in that we're going to be examining the contribution made by the mining industry since the discovery of minerals in the country in the 18th century. We also will be looking at the current situation in terms of its contribution to the citizenry of the country. And that also we would need to look in a frank and open manner into the future of the industry and the future contribution that the industry must make to the society. Among us, I would like to extend a special word of welcome. We are joined by a delegation from Namibia, our neighboring country. We have Ms. Dorothy Alawi, who serves in the Portfolio Committee on Foreign Affairs, Defense, and Security. Welcome, Madam. We also have Mr. Johan Frederick, who serves in the Portfolio Committee of Constitutional and Legal Affairs. Welcome, sir. We also have Ms. Annalisa Miroro, who serves in the Portfolio Committee on Public Accounts. Welcome, madam. They have been within the country to celebrate the Africa Day with us, and decided also to learn and understand how South Africans do their business in their parliamentary processes. We hope that we will be of value to you, and indeed also we will learn a thing or two from yourselves in the interaction after the meeting. Honorable members, as I have indicated, that the mining industry has made a very important contribution in the industrialization of the country. It has served as a catalyst in terms of establishing quite a number of industries since the 18th century. It has played a pivotal role in creating employment in the country, and it still continues to play that role because our employment levels in the industry are plus minus 300,000. And South Africa as a country is recently declared as the world's richest country when it comes to mineral reserves. Citigroup, in its latest report, has indicated that our mineral resources in the country worth in the proximity of $2.5 trillion. Loosely translated to the rands, it's about 18 trillion rands worth of mineral wealth that the country has. That's why we are declared by this international group as the world's richest country. We do have world reserves in platinum group metals of about 88%. World reserve in manganese of about 80%, 72% chrome. So the list goes on, that we've got quite important commodities in world standards, and hence we are declared as a country that is the world's richest country. But of course, once again, we have been declared by an international body as the world's most unequal society. You can see the contrast. The contrast is that on one hand, we are seen as the world's most wealthy country when you look at the mineral resources, but on the other hand, we are the world's most unequal society. And that we see the levels of poverty arising, including areas where minerals are being extracted from. Poverty is all over the country, and it's rising. And therefore, this is a situation that is unsustainable, because in no way can we sustain a bastion of wealth within the sea of poverty. That's unsustainable completely. And that as a country, particularly as members of parliament in this portfolio committee, we have a serious responsibility to then correct that anomaly, turn the situation around, so that the mineral wealth that the country has must therefore be used to improve the standard of living of the people in the country. And in response to this situation, the African National Congress in 2007, in its watershed congress in Polokwane, took a resolution that the country must establish a state-owned mining company to intervene in this situation so that we can be able as a country to amass the necessary resources that would assist us to respond to these huge social economic backlogs that we're confronted with, that also have been determined at the international level. Now, the process that we are entering into now is to examine the role that a state-owned mining company can play, and that we would want the public to talk to us as the public representatives in terms of how do they see the state-owned mining company being established? What role can it play? How its governance structure must look like? We want to listen to the public before we draw any conclusions. It may well be that other members of the public would want to address us on something else. They may want to venture into suggesting other interventions that the state must make in order to alleviate this serious situation that is confronting the country. So as the People's Parliament, we are open to listening and engaging with the society at large. And therefore, feel free to talk to us in addressing, in a manner that you see in which we can address this situation that is confronting the country. Therefore, in our program today, we would like to welcome the first organization that would address us, the South African Mining Development Association, for them to also talk to us about their views. We have opened the invitation, apart from the fact that parliamentary processes are public processes, and therefore, when there are public hearings, everybody, all organizations, all formations, have a right to approach Parliament so that they can talk to Parliament. But also there are specific target groups that we have targeted, so we have extended invitation to a wide range of organizations and people. Hence, today we would listen to the divergent views that will be put across to us. Therefore, let's therefore welcome and give the SAMDA the platform to talk to us. And indeed, in terms of the program before you, you would see that we've got quite a number of organizations that are going to talk to us. The African National Congress Youth League will be addressing us, Legal Resources Center as a formation that also deals with community matters. They will also be addressing us. And we would also receive a presentation from the Northern Cape Women in Mining. Well, welcome, madams, because mining has always been seen as the male-dominated kind of an industry, both in ownership and as well as in employment. So we are very grateful that we've got women players, players of a serious nature, that would talk to us about the future in this. We would also receive a presentation from SAWIMA, and indeed we would engage with all those presentations. SAMDA, please introduce your delegation and talk to Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. My name is Ntlha Muloi, and together with me I've got Mrs. Bridget Khadebe, who is the president of SAMDA. I'm the chairman of SAMDA. And Nonkobela Mazwai, the chief executive officer of Mujodi Resources, a company that is a member of SAMDA. Just shortly, SAMDA is an institution that represents the interests of the junior resources companies in South Africa, across the board and across the commodities. And we do also have a number of the established mining companies that are also members of SAMDA. The presentation, I mean, the way we've structured it, will probably, from our point of view as an organization, try to suss out a number of issues. One is we'll be looking at what we understand as state ownership or nationalization, because in terms of the debate, the two issues are sometimes confused. And why the state ownership debate now? Why is that the debate now? We'd look a little bit at the history of state ownership in South Africa in the mining industry. We'd look at the current state participation in the mining industry. And then we'll round up at looking at if there is a case for state ownership in the mining industry in South Africa. So those are the issues that we will cover. Now, I took Thesaurus and just looked at what the definition of nationalization is. And they came up with three very important points. The first one is the action of forming or becoming a nation. They also looked at something that says it's an action of rendering national in character, or looking at changing something from private to state ownership or state control. Now, there are various reasons why people would nationalize. Others would say, look, you would nationalize because you are setting a pace and a path towards socialism. Others would say, no, you nationalize or you get the state involved in the money industry as a means for state to achieve specific policy and socio-economic objectives in the current economic system. So you say there are certain failures in the economy, and therefore the state needs to participate to ensure that those are achieved. So those could be the two issues. And maybe the other one that I thought was important to mention in this thing is the way in which the state could participate. And I think certainly in terms of our democratic constitution, the state, if it were to participate in the mining industry, it would have to participate by its way through into the sector. Okay. And maybe we should start from the beginning, and the question is, where do we come from? I just took pieces of different sets of legislation in South Africa to set the tone. If you look at the Section 130 of the Transvaal Gold and Base Metal Law, 35 of 1908, it stated that no right may be acquired under this Act by a colored person, including Africans as defined in the Act, and the holder of a right acquired under the Law Number 15 of 1898 or a prior law under this Act shall not transfer or sublet or permit to be transferred or sublet any portion of such right to a colored person. If you look at Section 23(1) of the Development Trust and Land Act 18 of 1936, it provided that notwithstanding anything in any other law, the following provisions shall apply to land in respect of which the mineral rights are held by the trust or a black or in trust for a black tribe or community. No person shall prospect for mineral rights on such land without the written permission of the minister, provided subsection 3, save as it otherwise provided in this section. The trust shall, in respect of mineral rights held by it, be in the same position of any private holder of mineral rights. Now, this set the tone, saying that in South Africa we had very seriously established pervasive laws which were backed up by institutional mechanisms to exclude, to marginalize and alienate black people in general in participating in the mining industry. And certainly, from our point of view, this sets the tone for the kind of debate that we have today, to say what are the kind of things that we are trying to address as a nation today. And I also thought that maybe just to remind ourselves that if we look at the current policy debate, it's always important to refer back to where we're coming from a policy point of view. And this has been a very consistent policy. If you look at the Freedom Charter 1956, you look at the ANC's Ready to Govern documents of 1992, the Reconstruction and Development Program of 1994, and the Draft Minerals and Energy Policy Discussion Document of 1994. All these documents set up a very interesting pace in terms of minerals and mining policy in the country. One was increased state participation in the mining industry. Second one looked at equitable distribution of benefits that are derived from mining. And thirdly, it looked at expanding the mining cake in terms of beneficiation and also the industries that are linked and arise from mining. The other important thing that I thought we would look at is where we come from, because when we as a country negotiated the current constitutions under CODESA, we had two options. We could have chosen to prioritize transfer of economic power. But I think at that time, because the most important thing was our self-determination, we prioritized transfer of political power. And I think the assumption was that following the transfer of political power, then we'd have a basis for a transfer of economic power. And certainly, our contention is that the fact that the economy is largely not transformed, and the fact that some of the pillars of apartheid machinery remain intact today is a result of the kind of choices that we made, which, in my view, were correct choices for the circumstances. Okay, now, is state participation a new thing? My view is that it is not a new thing. Because if you look at the evolution of South African mining laws from the Dam Act and Gold Act of the 18th century, you'll see that the state had actually reserved ownership of mineral rights to itself with respect to precious metals and precious stones. I'm sure we are all aware that until very, very recently, the state held an interest in the De Beers Finch mine in terms of which De Beers was paying a lease, and also that the state claimed an interest in De Beers Cullinan and the Venetia mines, and that until very recently the gold mines had a special tax dispensation, the formula tax, in recognition of historical state interest. So the state had always had an interest in the mining industry. And in fact, if you look at the Minerals Act 50 of 1991, it recognized private and state ownership of mineral rights. And so that's where the MPRDA developed from. We also know that state had significant platinum group metal interest through the former Lebowa Minerals Trust, which was unbundled. And we also know that ISCO, which was unbundled into the current Mittal, Kumba, and Exxaro, was originally a state-owned mining company. And, of course, Sasol was established by the state. And we also know, as a fact, that most of the major mineral deposits in South Africa were discovered through state efforts. So government has been in the Israel industry, and government has been participating over the years. Now, the other important thing that I thought it is important to contextualize is where do we come from as a nation. Now, the documents that I listed, the Ready to Govern document, the Gold Concession Development Program, and the ANC policy document of 1994, right, all of them called for state ownership of mineral rights. Now, had the state, so this thing is going. Now, had the state owned mineral rights, it means the state would have had a direct role in government as an owner. But through negotiations and development of the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act, the state reached a compromise position with industry through which the state became a custodian of the mineral resources of the country. And that reduced the state role to a regulator and manager of the resources as opposed to a direct participant in the industry. My guess is that from this compromise, government then took a view that, you know, the government still needed to change the ownership of the mining industry. And the way in which government would change the ownership of the mining industry was to create what people were at that time calling patriotic capital, so which was the seed for black economic empowerment. A document was developed by the Department of Minerals and Energy then, following the mining summit of 2000, to look at the transformation of the mining industry. And it set out very, 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 very ambitious targets for transformation. And the targets for transformation document was 51% black ownership. Now, this is the chart that was leaked in July of 2002. And following the leaking of that charter, there was engagement between government and business, and of course a compromise document was developed, which is the current mining charter, where we settled for 26% incumbent ownership and recognition of previous deals. Now, if you look at the slide, the important thing is that what you have on the left-hand side are the original positions, and what you look on the right-hand side are the compromise positions. And in fact, if you assess our progress, my view is always that assess the progress in terms of where people originally come from, not where people compromise. So that's an important point from what we say. Now, following this compromise, the establishment of the mining charter, I think the issue was then to set out a Protestant program of transformation in South Africa. And that process and program of transformation was underpinned by certain assumptions. And one of the most important assumptions is contained in this slide, that simplified slide. If you look at the green line, so basically, okay, let's start here. The blue line is what you normally would see. A big company has just concluded a transaction. People are standing in the front page of Business Day or Sunday Times, and they're all rich. Okay, they own 25% or 26% of this company. The two other lines are the lines of reality. Okay, the green line assumes that over time, this transaction is having been concluded, people will pay dividends, and with the dividends, sorry, this thing is very sensitive. With the dividends, the debt will be paid off, and after a time, ownership will vest. So this is an assumption. So that's how these things would have been structured. The red line says that maybe there will not be enough dividends paid, and the transaction will go, and at the end of the time period, there will be a requirement for a bullet payment. Now, the unfortunate thing from our assessment is that the green line is not happening. So ownership is not vesting, and most of these transactions are underwater. So in actual fact, what you get is the red light. Okay? So people are not getting or deriving any economic benefits from these transactions. Okay? If you look at Samda Commission, the company called Kio, to do just an off-the-top assessment of the state of transformation in the mining industry. And these are some of the figures that we've come up with. Now, if you look at the gross value of Black Shaw Holding within the top 25 JSE listed companies in South Africa, it's only 5.27% of that total market cap. I think for those who are going for state ownership, it could be interesting that if you look at that assessment, that the PIC owns shares which are worth about 50.1 billion in 10 companies, and in terms of percentage of the total market cap, is 2.76%. It's also worthy to note that only 7 companies have implemented employee share ownership programs with a value of 12 billion, or only 0.53% of the total market cap of the top 25 companies. So, which means the employees, the people who were bearing the brunt of the development of the mining industry in South Africa, are actually not benefiting.
0.53%. Another thing that's important is that if you assess all the transactions that have been made in the company that dominates all the transactions is actually Anglo-American,
because of its strong position in platinum group metals, in coal, in gold, iron ore, manganese, chrome, and diamonds. So in actual fact, I'm sure we could have achieved better results if we just went out and sat down with Anglo-American and decided to deal with them as opposed to come and get a loss, because they actually dominated all the transactions. Okay? It is also a fact that women remain largely underrepresented in the mining industry, and that the progress with other pillars of the charters are not promising at all. In fact, there is no movement from our point of view. Okay. Now, that was looking at what you normally call 26% participation in terms of the charter. But there is another level of participation, and these are the people that go to the Department of Minerals and Energy and apply for prospecting rights. And government gives thousands of these applications to black entrepreneurs, with the hope that these prospecting rights would empower black and would result in the creation of new businesses and new enterprises. What happens in reality? If you look at the six diagrams on the right there, I've just tried to summarize what normally happens. So first thing is that a B company will go to the department and they get a prospecting right. Reality is the B company does not have money. So what do? The B company will sit on the right, or the B company will sell the right. If the B company sit on the right, the fact of the matter is that after 3 or 5 years, the right lapses and the B company loses the right. Okay? And if the B company sells the right, government says, no, you can't sell the right. So what happens? The B company will then go and get typically a junior resource company, a Canadian or Australian listed company, as a partner. The Canadian or Australian company will then loan money to the B company for exploration. At a particular point, and in fact in most cases, just before they develop a feasibility study. The junior resource company will make a cash call on BE and say, you must put your money in. And at that point in time, the BE company has incurred significant debt, and the BE company does not have money. So what does the BE company do? The junior company will either loan more money to BE company, or they will dilute the BE company and exit the BE company, right? Then what does the BE company do? The BE company goes to government and apply for a prospecting right, and the BE company does not have money. And then the BE company go and get a JRC partner to load the money, they exit them, and the BE company goes and apply for a prospecting right. So it is a vicious cycle. So what basically happened is that the rights that government is giving to BE companies to help them to create new enterprises are being converted consistently into debt, and consistently these people are being disempowered. So that tells me that the current model that we're using is not working. Okay? The rights that government is giving to black people to try empowerment is not empowering them. It is actually getting them heavily indebted and getting them disempowered. So we need a completely different model, which is why maybe we came to the debate that we're having today. Okay. Then I'll move on. So that was just basically in the form of background. Now, is there state ownership elsewhere in the world? And in what is the nature and form of that state ownership, right? And my view is that there are a number of these. You can have a look at them. One is mining and community development funds, where funds are collected from mining industry for specific objectives by industry, by government, for rehabilitation and also for community development. There are models where, like for instance, in Chile's Enami, where you look at industry incubators, where government provides capital to stimulate industry players in junior miners, and government can also own share in those things. It provides technical and metallurgic and financial and trading services to correct market failures, okay, which could be some kind of a model that you could look at to correct the kind of issues that I said were problematic with the BEs in South Africa. You have issues of state investment vehicles like Brazil's 30% stake in Vale, where they looked at a big operating company and bought the stake, and state is a silent partner. But even though the state has got a silent partner, it's got what is called golden shareholder rights, which are veto powers with respect to certain major strategic decisions that the state has defined. We've got examples where we've got public-private partnerships in Botswana. We've got companies where the state is operators, companies like Codelco, and we've got, of course, companies like ZCCM. Now, the issue is that in all these instances, there are instances where state companies have succeeded and there are instances where state companies have failed, which is basically the same. We've got instances where private companies fail and we've got instances where private companies succeed. So you can't say that generically state companies will fail. But certainly, Codelco is a very successful state-operated company. Now, what are the kind of things that the South African public would look at in looking at a state-owned mining company? One would be looking at things like the ability to share wealth, it would be to look at addressing industry constraints, it would be looking at to capture more wealth for BEs, ability to capture the upside in terms of value creation, and to align public and private sector involvement. And there are a number of other issues that we can unpack in that. So I'm not going to go through in those. And what would be the possible reasons for a state-owned mining company? Now, you can actually see that I have actually moved from nationalization to a state-owned mining company in terms of the debate that I'm making. Because from the two models that I've told you originally as I started, it's very clear that I've chosen a particular model from the two. So one would be to secure supply of minerals of strategic significance. In South Africa, for instance, things like coal and uranium. It would be to support sidestream industries. It would be to advance objectives of the Freedom Charter. It will be to ensure that the state is able to advance the issues of transformation that government believes that the industry is not advancing. Okay? Speeding up growth and transformation of the economy, fighting poverty, building social cohesion and state legitimacy, pursuing the values of international cooperation, and building a developmental state. You would also be looking at contribution to the fiscus, and the important thing would be to consolidate all interests of the state into one company for effective management. Okay. Now, that was extent of state ownership internationally, but what is the extent of state ownership in South Africa today? I told you what happened historically. The state does have interest in mines directly. Some of them successful, some of them not so successful. And examples would be Alexco, not very successful, not so successful, I guess. And you've got Fosco. Fosco is a successful company. We've got African Exploration. African Exploration is a new baby on the block, which I guess from my point of view, I cannot assess at the moment whether it's successful or not. We've got LIMDEV. And you've got rights that are held by state through a number of state institutions like NEXA and ESCOM. We do have investments that are held by investment entities, and you can see how diverse these are. If you look at the holdings, for instance, of IDC stakes in Fosco, in Sasol, in the Mazal Aluminium Smelter, in Merafe Resources, in Hennig, in Galahad Manganese, in Kumba Iron Ore, in Corridor Sands, in Kolwezi, in the DRC, a number of projects in and outside the country. Some of them strategic, some of them not so strategic. You do have, I told you about the holding of the Public Investment Commission, and the Development Bank of South Africa also owns interest. So in various forms and shapes, the state is already participating in the economy anyway. And can South African geology support, our geological endowment, can it support state participation? And if it does, in which mineral commodities would support this? Now, I think, Chairman, you've already said that South Africa is a treasure trove of mineral resources because of an exceptional endowment of mineral resources. And we've got world-class, unique mineral deposits that do not occur anywhere in the world. The Bushveld Igneous Complex, our manganese in the Kalahari Manganese Field, the West Gold Basin, our aluminum silicates, and the Karoo Coal Basin. I mean, these are significant mineral deposits by world standards, and in fact, world class. And then the state, if the state wanted to participate in our visit, it could take decide to participate in some strategic minerals. You could look at infrastructure minerals that are important, iron ore, manganese, chrome, your industrial minerals, and your agri minerals. These are important minerals, infrastructure minerals. You could look at energy minerals, coal, uranium, PGMs. You could look at high-tech minerals. These are the minerals of the future, like titanium, zircon, rutile for pigment, tantalum for miniaturization that's going smaller, and magnesium for light alloys. These are the other minerals of the future. So basically, my view is that the state could look at participating in these strategic minerals as opposed to being an omnibus, an undefined omnibus. Now, I'm a geologist, so a geologist can never finish a presentation without showing up a geological map. Okay? So this is the geological map of South Africa, showing the manganese deposits. And you can see that the manganese deposits occur right through the country from the Western Cape to the Northern Cape, Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, KZN. If you look at those cycles, the big rings represent known deposits, and the smaller ones actually represent just occurrences. But the interesting thing is, I hope this is not going to move. The interesting thing is that the Kalahari manganese field represents 85% of the world's manganese reserves. That little basin there. Now, this basin, traditionally in South Africa, was owned by only two companies. which was Samanco manganese and asthma. And following the promulgation of the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act and the Charter, you can see how much the Department of Mineral Resources has progressed in transforming the Kalahari Manganese Basin. All those companies, except Samanco and Asmang, are new companies that have been granted rights in that field. So from a point of view of entrepreneurship, this certainly has opened up the Kalahari Manganese field. But the important thing is, from if you're looking at it from a national perspective, is that if government had participated as an active player, we could have managed to get a lot seriously for the nation, because this 80% of the world's manganese, and basically the state has given away in the way that it is at the moment. And then certainly if you looked at this, you would say that, look, there are no more opportunities for manganese in South Africa. And I'll just show you a small example that, as you can see there, that is the Kalahari manganese field that I've just shown you. And just on top of, north of it there, is the Avontuur Basin. This is a new basin that has been discovered by a company called Aquila and joint venture with Mojadi Resources. It's a new manganese basin. As you can see, they've discovered 34 million tons of manganese at 40%. This is very, very good grades of manganese. But all I'm saying is that even though you have the Kalahari manganese field, it was all given away. With exploration and investment in exploration, you can discover new resources in South Africa. And that's why we say South Africa is the mineral treasure trove. Okay. These are the coal fields of South Africa that map the hatched lines, the red dots will show you active coal mines, and the green dots will show you abandoned coal mines. Now, the important thing with this slide is that you will see that most of the coal operations in South Africa were concentrated alongside Mpumalanga and KZN. But there are a lot of coal fields. We've got a coal field down here in the Eastern Cape, the Indwe, Maltino. We've got the Free State coal fields. The Springbok Flats, you can see nothing has been developed there in terms of mine. Mopane Coalfield in the north, with only one coal mining operation there, but I think a number of companies have gone there in terms of exploration. And we have the Waterberg Coalfield that go into Botswana. Yeah, certainly, all I'm saying is that the opportunities for coal in South Africa are still significant and vast. This is the famous Bushveld complex. The red dots will show you active platinum mines. The green ones will show chrome mines. Blue is vanadium, and then you've got fluorspar. Now, historically, before the Act came into being, these rights were held by practically three companies in South Africa. Okay. But in terms of the state, I think where maybe we may have made a little bit of a blunder is that in Limpopo, a significant part of these rights were held by the Lebowa Minerals Trust. Okay? Just in terms of neighborliness, geology does not know political boundaries. That there goes into Zimbabwe. This thing is very sensitive. That little line there goes into Zimbabwe. So in Zimbabwe, we've got exactly the same kind of mineralization of platinum, chrome, and vanadium as in South Africa. Now, this is a new picture of the Bushveld, showing a number of new companies that have come in as a result of the promulgation of the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act. So the basin was opened by the new laws. Okay. Again, these are iron ore deposits in South Africa. They occur all the way throughout the country. But again, like manganese, the only significant deposits will be here in the Kalahari, where you've got your Kumba iron ore operations. And certainly, a lot of people always hear says that with iron ore, there are no more opportunities. Okay? And I'll beg to differ and say to you that these are the new projects in iron ore that have been discovered by junior resource companies in South Africa. Up in the north in Limpopo, we've got a company called Varimo that looked at the Bushveld magnetites, and they've got a 2 billion ton resource that they have identified. They've got challenges with metallurgy, but my view is that they will crack that. Along the border between Swaziland and South Africa, there is a 1.2 billion ton iron ore deposit that just been discovered, and that is being developed at the moment. In the Northern Cape, we've got Aquila, again following a number of iron ore projects. So through exploration, a number of new mineral opportunities can be opened up in South Africa, and certainly a number of these things were discovered on the basis of historical information that is with the Council for Geoscience. Now, we are part of the African continent. This map will show you all known mineral deposits in Africa, whether they would be hard rock minerals or they would be oil and gas. Okay, so that this line here, that these are all known mineral deposits in Africa. It's very sensitive. I apologize. Okay, whatever is inside the diagram are well-known mineral deposits in Africa. But however, you can see that in between, there are many gaps that correspond to zones of low geodata, where we do not have a lot of geology. But the other thing is that a large part, especially of the southern part of the continent, is covered by the Kalahari Sand, which has made it very difficult for exploration and discovery of new deposits. Now, the U.S. Geological Survey has developed this map to show the potential for discovery of new mineral resources in Africa. So the potential is still huge, and cooperation of states with the private sector would unravel and discover still world-class deposits in Africa and in Southern Africa as well. Okay. I think I just said to show you that there is potential for geology can support a state mining company. So what are the key considerations? From our point of view, it is important to clarify why the state wants to be involved in the mining industry as owner. What is it that the state needs to achieve? And what should be the form and nature of that state involvement? Okay. And certainly it's very important that we apply our mind to the assets like Alexco of the state where we have not succeeded, and see how we're going to avoid the repetition of those. It is important also to determine how this is going to be resourced, particularly to pursue exploration, because we believe that exploration is the future of mining in South Africa. Okay, other than the consolidation of prospecting projects and assets as well as mining investment, of SSV, do we intend to acquire operating mines? Because that could be the other thing, that where the state just decided that I'm going to acquire an operating mine. I don't know. Examples, Sasol mining. And then the other one is that we need to look at this whole thing of exploration in strategic minerals. Is the state going to go it alone, or is it going to rely on strategic partners? Will the state pioneer beneficiation as a strategic area of business focus? And the important thing to view there is what is it that the state will do that the current mining houses cannot do? Will it be involved in supply and mining of capital goods, services, and consumables? And certainly, how will it advance or facilitate transformation? These are some of the considerations that I think are important for us to make. Kelewil, Engos.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Samda. I think the difficulty that's going to confront us is the unavailability of the copies of your submission. But be that as it may, we would engage with the input, because copies are still being processed. Let's thank the input from Sander. Indeed, it's quite rich, and it confirms the Citigroup report that indeed South Africa is the world's wealthiest country when it comes to mineral reserves. And also the question begs, why are we so poor? Why are the poverty levels continue to rise? What is it that we are not doing right? And I think these inputs are going to assist us. They must assist us in addressing that very central question that is confronting the country as we speak. Can we allow members to then engage with the input and from whatever you have heard? I really appreciate the difficulty that you would have, but from the notes that you have taken, we can always come back if that's what you would want us to do, if you would want to get the documents, because it's quite the rich information that has been given to us, and then the history. But you know, quite interestingly, when you were tracing the history, in terms of the regulatory framework, you quoted your Transvaal Gold and Base Metal Law, as well as different other legislative frameworks. Now, which specifically excluded black people in the country from owning. You also made mention in terms of the charter, in attempts to find solutions. But then there's this term that is loosely used, historically disadvantaged South Africans, which is with in good faith in the CODESA interaction has included white women, but in actual practice, even in employment levels, it has been abused by the industry. But tell us, because we need to address this central question as well, have the white women been excluded by law in your knowledge in terms of the research that you have done? If not, are there some examples that we can look at so that going forward this input can assist us to address these questions? And also you have raised quite seriously, in no uncertain terms, the challenges that are confronting the system of BEE. I mean, you've sketched it in such a manner that one can see that we are just, engaging in a merry-go-round kind of vicious cycle game, which is not working. And newspapers also, media also does confirm that there are these serious challenges in terms of the BEE arrangement. But also, interestingly, you mentioned that in us going forward finding the solution, when we are making the case for the state-owned mining company, you also flagged some highlights that we need to avoid the Alex Coe dilemma. Just take us through briefly on that, because Alex Coe is state-owned, and therefore, if we're talking of state-owned mining company, how would it be different from Alex Coe? Just those few areas of clarity, whilst members are still, honourable members are still dealing with their draft notes. But I see Honourable Khululu has been triggered, and Honourable I think you'll have to take note. You'll have to note Honourable Khululu, Honourable Sondo, Honourable Matibela, Honourable Schmidt, Honourable Mare, Honourable Ngele, Magagula, and then finally Honourable Bigan. In that order, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank also SAMDA for their presentation, and also say that it would be highly appreciated if this committee can get those copies of the presentation. The first one, actually, Chairperson, will be on the, it's a clarity-seeking question on the PIC, in that it has got shares worth 50 billion rand in 10 companies, or 2.76% in the total market cap of the 25 companies. I'd be interested, for instance, to know which companies are those that PIC has got those shares. And the second one, chair, will be on the, what you call, on Samda itself, actually. I would love to know as to whether they will support the idea of the state-owned mining company. Let me take those two for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Matibela.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the wonderful presentation, which is eye-opening as well. My question is also on the... I just wanted to know what made this mines, this state-owned mines, to fail. In fact, all of them. The other one. In the presentation, you spoke of everything, and that was understandable. But what I did not hear was about the land issue, because the land, in most cases, it's the one also that holds back the BEE companies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say that even the sitting arrangement here is disadvantaging us. I don't know whether the DA would be happy having had the lion's share of the presentation whilst we're struggling to look at even the screens. As unfortunate as that may be, my first question would be, nationalization is a road to socialism. What's wrong in that? Literally, socialism is a scare word to the big capital. What's wrong in a state that is commune in nature, especially a state that feeds the nation? That is the first question. And basing the following question on the possible solution that you have identified, my assertion would be mineral and petroleum resources are the common heritage of the population, and the state is the custodian thereof. Now, what would be improper if the state, therefore, is a custodian of mineral and petroleum resources, forms itself in a nature that would provide and coordinate those resources? Those are my two questions, Chairperson, so far. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just, as a, just before I start off, just ask what does Macholi Resources stand for? How does it fit into the scheme of things? Then basically my questions are the following. You speak on behalf of the ANC Youth League. Sorry. Why is the ANC Youth League in Parliament? Sorry, my apologies. I've got it wrong. Sorry, can I stand over? My apologies. Okay.
Honourable members, let's...
Could I then just stand with my first question, please?
Honourable Schmidt, because, you know, he joined the proceedings whilst you're already on the platform. So, Honourable Schmidt, the ANC Youth League is led by its president, Mr. Julius Malema. They are coming after... welcome.
I will retract that. Can I then just stand with the question? How does Macholi
Point of order, Chair. Yes, I don't think you can ask. This parliament is the parliament of the people. I don't think that Honorable will ask that why, who is here. I think he must withdraw that statement. I think.
Your take?
There's nothing to withdraw, Mr. Chair. What I'm asking is, how does Macaulay Resources fit into the bigger scheme of things? Who's their directorships? That's all I'm asking.
How does who?
Macaulay Resources, which is indicated at the bottom of that screen you have there.
That's
my question. It comes directly from their presentation.
Okay. Is that the only question you have?
For the moment, yes.
Okay. Honorable Mare.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, the statement that was made that women remain largely underrepresented in the mining industry is also applicable to most industries. How do you envisage to address this directly? And the second question would be, beneficiation is important to the people on a lower level. And with the BEE company, it could be that beneficiation could be actually only to be to the directors of the company. How do you envisage that this beneficiation would be to the employees of the company or to the people on the ground, the voter? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngele.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Samda. I also join my colleagues and say thank you very much for the presentation, though my colleagues have already taken my question. But my question was, if the women are underrepresented, as you say, what about the community surrounding? Do you involve the community in whatever you are in, decision taking or whatever you are doing? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makagule.
Chairperson, my question is that when they present, they said actually they are having a mine, they are mining. And actually, I want to know the model that they are using in their mine. Another thing, comrade, chairperson, is that they didn't disagree on the state-owned mining, neither even in the nationalization. So, but they spoke more on the state-owned mining, which they agreed about what the parliament wanted to do. And I also want to know what is their mind in terms of the nationalization. And then the other thing, Chairperson, I attempted to ask, they said that there is a mineral between the border of South Africa and Swaziland. I attempted to ask that, but I won't ask it now because I'm interested in the concept. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Bigane.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also say thanks to the presentation. It was valuable, but it's very frustrating when we are not able to get documents earlier for us to can interrogate it and participate effectively. I'm really disappointed that we didn't get this beforehand. But at any rate, Chair, I'd like to ask from Samda as to, they've given the information that they've given us, and we seem to have a common understanding in terms of nationalization versus state mine ownership. But my question to them is, what related work or research has been done to ensure engagement, advocacy, involvement in especially small-scale miners? And what involvement have they had, effective involvement have they had to ensure proper economic development for relevant stakeholders within the mining industry? And out of the challenges identified, which were mentioned in the presentation, what significant steps have been taken to ensure that we work towards a common goal of state mine ownership stressing out what the advantages thereof would be. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Liga Araba Samda.
It's the three of us, so I'll ask the ladies to also take the questions and answer them. Maybe Mama Khateba can start with, have white women been excluded from the mining industry? Then I'll answer that.
As you realize, as it was indicated, there were specific laws that prohibited the involvement of black men and black women. I've been in this industry for 24 years as a contract miner, not as a BE that's happening today. Similarly, so Mr. Nchaga Moloi has been in this industry since that time. And I remember as a black woman, what I did was actually defying legislation, going underground where I wasn't supposed to, doing mining construction for Anglo and the various mining companies in West Driefontein, St. Helena, and all those mining companies. If it were not for the partnership with National Union of Mine Workers, I don't think I would have stood here today speaking to you. Those were the things that we encountered because the legislation prohibited black men and black women and also prohibited us from being involved in specific roles as mining engineer, geologists. I don't have to go through that. You all know that as South Africans. However, there were women, there was one woman in particular whom I also know very well and I respect, who owned mines and during that time, Franca Severin, in the Limpopo region. And
the name is?
Franca Severin, in the Limpopo region. So while there were various rules and legislation that prohibited black women and black men, those rules did not actually have the same bearing or did not exist for white men and white women. So I think this issue in terms of HDSA will have to be looked at, and then we have to come to a conclusion as to which extent are we going to say who is really historically disadvantaged and to which extent the historically disadvantaged can become part of the activities of the benefits of today in a way that transformation takes place. Not at the exclusion of the majority of the people, because there's nothing wrong with the legislation. The mining legislation is creating an enabling environment. The challenge is in the implementation, and it's that we have really to debate. And we can't do it in here. A certain committee, Mr. Fred Gona, would have to be created. That could be the think tank as part of this charter review that the government is doing to really thresh out these things. Because we've been very active in the charter review with government, but portfolio committee has not been involved there, so I don't know what the protocols are. But maybe you might, on your own here, ask us further to come and unpack some of these charter review issues, because they all handle what went wrong, where the success rates are, and what we should do the way forward.
I'll answer some questions and I'll get Nankobela to answer some of the questions, particularly in terms of what Mutjodi Resources is and also the question on the ownership and the interests are held by the PIC. Now, the question was, what happened to Alexco? Why did Alexco fail? Now, Alexco is a state mining company, a diamond mining company, about 800 kilometers north of here on the border between South Africa and Namibia. They are involved in alluvial and marine diamond mining. And Alexco certainly has faced for a very long time a very serious land claim action. And as a result of that, my view is that the state, the process took a very long time to resolve, and the state actually took a little bit of a backseat and allowed Alexco to swim by itself. And the company did not invest in exploration, did not invest in new machinery, did not invest in new productive capacity. I know that the land claim has now been resolved and the communities have been given a significant stake in Alexco. and hopefully with that, the company will have an opportunity to take off into the future. I think the other one that probably was the problem with Alexco is that Alexco has always been restricted to operate as a mine and not a company. So it's always operating in Alexander Bay, and certainly it has not been given opportunities to acquire assets elsewhere in South Africa, even in Diamond. Okay, so, and there is no company that has ever succeeded at SMI. All companies need to diversify. And certainly, if the state had given Alexco an opportunity to diversify and acquire assets elsewhere, it would have been able to survive the storms if there were problems with production on the alluvial and also on the seaside. As we know, that the sea days in Alaska have significantly declined over the years because of climatic change. So that is the problem with Alexco, and I think the solution would be for Alexco to be given an opportunity to get assets elsewhere to diversify its portfolio. And other question was, will SAMDA support a state-owned mining company? I think our point was very clear, that as far as SAMDA is concerned, there are jurisdictions in the world where state-owned mining companies exist side by side with the private sector. They operate on the same rules as the companies in the private sector, and they are not given any undue preference right over everybody else. So our view is that if a state mining company exists in South Africa, in operate alongside the private sector, in joint venture with the public sector, in PPPs with the private sector, and these kind of things, there would absolutely be no problem with the state mining company. And I think a related question was that what made state mining companies to fail? And my view is that state mining companies can fail on the same basis as private mining companies fail. And it has to do with management. If a private company is not properly managed, it will fail. If a state mining company is not properly managed, it will fail. It has to do with resourcing. It has to do with the quality of the assets that the company has. And certainly, there are examples, for instance, in countries like Zambia and the DRC, where external factors to the mining companies collapsed them. It has nothing to do with the management of the company or the assets, but it had everything to do with externalities. And certainly, if you look at the companies that have succeeded, like Codelco and Tepsona in Botswana, you will see that the external environment is supportive to the development of those companies. The question of the land issue, certainly we are involved in the mining, mining and the mineral sector, not so much in land, but what I can say is that historically in South Africa, land and minerals have always been intertwined. So land dispossession has always been linked to mining and dispossession alienation in the mining industry. The whole issue of the hostile systems, migrant labor system, and all those kind of things were designed where people were denied land, forced into homelands, and then forced to be purveyors of cheap labor to the mining industry. It was a wholly linked and intertwined strategy. What is wrong with socialism? I don't know. Certainly, my view is that the kind of economic system that we have in South Africa is a good economic system, and the fact that our government is going on a strong route towards a developmental state that cares for its people and provides for its people and increased service delivery to the people, I'm happy with that. These terms to me seems to be a little bit muddled up because we don't really know what people are talking about, talking about socialism, communism even today, mixed economy, capitalism. I think we are all cross-referencing on these things. The important thing is what is it that you want to achieve? If the important thing that you want to achieve is to ensure that there are benefits that go to the communities, that we provide high-quality services to our people, that we ensure that our economy grows and distributes, for the well-being of all the people of South Africa, I am happy. We can call it whatever you like. And then there was a question on and beneficiation and how beneficiation will benefit employees. The important thing with beneficiation is that beneficiation provide high quality, high skilled jobs, better paying better working conditions. And certainly, in South Africa at the moment, we know that we've got this exceptional endowment of mineral resources. But you know, even if we have 184 years worth of reserves in South Africa, the fact of the matter is that eventually they will be depleted. Eventually, we're going to be left with a hole in the ground. And the important thing as a nation is that we need to take simple strategic decisions to ensure that we use our mineral wealth to industrialize the country and to come up with high value-added knowledge industries, and that we develop the people, the skills of our people. I mean, it is completely unacceptable, MLP, that you've got a person that spends their lifetime in a mine operating a drill rig, and that's all they can do. And when they are retrenched and they go to the rural areas, there is nothing else they can do, because the whole life they've been operating a drill, okay? And there is no drill in the communities, okay? So we must use our mineral wealth wisely to develop our economy. And certainly there are examples in the world. If you look, for instance, at the development of the company that you normally call Nokia, it was based on based simple communications in a forestry environment that was developed up and upgraded. If you look at what's happening with Norway, with the development fund, they have taken the resources that they're getting from oil and they're investing that in higher added activities in the economy and industrializing it. And that is the road that we need to go with South Africa. And to me, that is the value of beneficiation. What about the communities? My view is that, the communities have to be involved, the communities have to benefit. There is just absolutely no way that cannot happen. And then I can... can you answer the two, and then we'll answer the last one. Yeah.
One of the questions was, who is Majority Resources? Majority Resources is a junior resource company. It has been involved in the mining exploration space in South Africa. It's 100% black owned and operated. It is a model BE company in that, in the way it conducts its business, it balances the interests of government in terms of the objectives that are set out by the law. It also balances the interests of the community, hence the model BE company. It has been involved in iron ore, manganese, a number of commodities. They do the work on the ground as intended by the law. It is a pathfinder, if I can call it that. Because of the position that the company is in, it provides guidance and advisory as a leader in the industry, and it provides such capacity and knowledge base for organizations like SAMDA, to answer your question in terms of the link, that it does in terms of its leadership and also capacity in a number of other respects. The other question that I may want to tackle that's closely related to that is the BE challenge that was raised much, much earlier on. If one thinks that the cost of education is high, try the cost of illiteracy or lack of education. The BE challenge, as far as we are concerned at SAMDA, revolves around knowledge and understanding of what value is. That is, when a company is granted a prospecting right, before they engage in a transaction with a financier, do they or do they not understand the value that is intrinsic in that right? If people understood that, and that is a function of education, then they would have negotiated better terms in terms of engagement, as opposed to being indebted, but they would have created value at the back of the fact that you actually have a prospecting right that nobody else would be able to exploit without that piece of paper. That is value, and somebody must be able to negotiate on that basis. The other easier question was the PIC in terms of its leading role and the percentage it holds. The PIC is a government employee pension fund. Those are the funds that the PIC invests. Let's start there. It holds 5% of Anglo-American, which makes it the largest shareholder in Anglo-American. It also holds 5.5% of Sasol RSA. Sasol RSA owns 100% of Sasol Mining. The question was, what investments does the PIC hold? Now, again, just to add on to what my colleagues have said as far as community involvement, of course, nothing about the communities without the communities. For us, it extends
beyond the communities that are fortunate enough to be located in areas that are mineral resource endowed. It goes beyond that to labor-sending areas and communities. In fact, if one were to look at other industrial linkages, it would even extend to areas that do not have mining as a result of the skills and expertise that are generated in the mining activity, and to make sure that those skills and activities and competences can be utilized post the closure of a mine. That is, if I can say it in a sustainable development, extending the benefits to communities beyond the life of a mine. Of course, the law requires that whatever activities you do in a community, you make sure that it is in the interest of the community. It is required that a company must interact with the IDPs, the integrated development plans of communities and municipalities. In those plans, it is clearly stated what the objectives or priorities of each and every single community are. And in that regard, a company would only get involved in the things that are needed by the community as opposed to the things that the company figures it wants to do for the community. The model that we use in mining, the model is simple, straightforward. You balance your business activities that is generating profits with compliance with the law, which is what the objectives of the Act spell out. And again, taking into consideration the community interest, as in what happens to them beyond the life of your mine in those. That's what I call the balancing act. The other question is, what research has been made in ensuring involvement of small-scale miners? SAMDA has commissioned research work in the mining sector, and that research work is for the benefit of its members. SAMDA appreciates that knowledge base is the first thing that we need to establish if we're going to empower our members, if we're going to help them make informed decisions. They need to understand the space in which they operate, and this is what this research seeks to achieve.
In terms of the small-scale miners, I think that's a very valid question, because at one stage when we did the SAMDA research to identify who the junior mining sector is, we then discovered that there were more than 10,000 small-scale mining entities in South Africa. That was about in the early 2000s. And these are lots of very small people that don't have enough skills, and some of them don't have expertise, or others do have skills or expertise, but they don't have the money. And the historic challenge in mining is the exploration funding. And for many years, SAMDA has been trying to address the lack of exploration funding. Now, I do know that there is going to be, I mean, the royalty tax is now going to kick in this year. And what we want to find out is, to which extent is the royalty tax going to be meaningful to the mining industry? Is this money going to be taken from us, all over and above all the tax money that we're paying, to be reinvested in the under non-mining? Because, you know, the small-scale miners can get lots of skills, enhancement, money, and money for exploration out of that. We do have our historically, disadvantaged universities that don't have faculties of mines. We do have the science councils, the MINTEX, the mining techs, the CSIR that do need money to continue with that research to make the mining industry more meaningful. And then we have a potential state-owned mining house that might need money, because a lot of companies are asking, where's the money going to come from for creating those state-owned mining entities? So, you know, there's a lot that can be done out of that royalty tax. And I think we have to really not allow Treasury to just take all the money and not allow us, the mining industry, to somehow get it back. Otherwise, it will be very futile. Money is the major problem, and that is why without money to explore, as Mr. Moloi has indicated, a lot of these BE deals are becoming useless deals. In the end, if you look at the review, the ownership does not vest anymore in the hands of those historically disadvantaged communities or people, but it vests in the hands of the advantaged. The rural communities are still at large. Why is it that wherever we mine, our people are still poor? Whenever we go to Limpopo, to Northwest, or wherever, you drive through those poor communities. Why is it that the models are only empowering a few at the expense of the majority? You know, I come from the rural community where we fought for those
royalties to be paid back to us. And that is how we all became involved in mining. The royalties were never paid, the rural renewal programs never happened. But to the extent that now the law has changed, our people are still not benefiting. To which extent will the state-owned mining company be meaningful in terms of addressing the majority of the problems? You know, it's a pity that Mr. Moloi actually demonstrated in our presentation the strategic minerals. What we would have loved to see was for the state to have engaged in a macroeconomic approach where the strategic minerals would have been in some entity that will make sure that the majority of the people still get, you know, benefits, maybe by the ownership of the state, while not excluding the participation of other mining companies. But, you know, we're just going through a five-year charter review, and by 2014, how many of us are actually going to have net value? These are the things that we are fighting about when we engage with the stakeholders. They talk about ownership, but what's the point of saying you're an owner, but when you still owe? Net value means if you buy a car, to the extent that you've bought that car that costs $500,000 and you don't own it, then you're the owner. But if you have not paid for it and you've paid $300,000, so $200,000 outstanding, and there's a credit crunch that says you're going to be retrenched, you can't pay your car back, the bank is going to take your car. So this is exactly what's happening to the BEE partnerships. So these partnership models are always engaged with people that do not have the necessary mining technological skills, mining lawyer, mining engineers, financial people, and they sit there with companies that have all those resources. And when you find and you look at the shareholders agreements, the purchase and sale agreements, the subscription agreements, and all these agreements, you find that in the end, the big company does not exist. He might be having 80% of equity participation, but the economic benefits are maybe 20%. And so we are just appealing to South Africa P2I Limited at large that, you know, we really have to come to the table and let us just tell the truth. This issue about BEE in the legislation is very useful. The implementation has a lot of challenges. And we have to relook at how we can address these challenges. There's a 2014 deadline by the charter. But in 2009, 31st of October last year, not even 15% of BEE was in the hands of BEE ownership, as you know, according to the charter. So what's going to happen by 2014? And you know, so the road traveled has not ended. But we don't want to disregard the fact that we have a good legislation. Let us just make sure that the implementation becomes a meaningful one. And to the extent that we can contribute, the good thing about SAMDA is you've got mining companies and owners of mines, black people that have been in this industry right from the beginning for the past 24 years. So we've been part of it. And then you've got the newcomers that have become party to this benefits that the new legislation has made possible. So, you know, we can contribute a lot in terms of helping in partnering to address the challenges the way forward.
Thank you very much. Those were the responses from SAMDA. I see an indication from Mangale that there's one particular follow-up question that she's got, and also Honorable Sondra. Let's take that bite.
Yes, Chairperson. She is asking exactly the questions I wanted to ask from them. When they say the community is involved, why is it that the community around the mines is becoming poorer and poorer, even more than it was before, yet you are saying they benefit? That's what I understand. You said they are benefiting from the mines, but they are becoming poor every day.
Honorable Sondo.
Chairperson, thank you very much. just a follow-up, it might have been referred to, but I didn't hear it quite clearly. The geological potential that you have referred to, stating all the mineral resources that we have, the challenges in mining, you've you've lamented on that, and you've also touched the main reason for us to be debating this this intention, the abject poverty, communities that are still subjected to abject poverty, and the state as the custodian of these minerals is saying, let's make the rule stricter. Now let's go for the option of a state-owned company. What would you say on that? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Tinto, followed by Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. some dimensions that women are still largely underrepresented in the industry, but we've got SAWIMA. What are they doing? What are they also helping to assist women that have come together in SAWIMA? Or what are their plans?
Thank you, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only two issues. The one is, I think the discussion comes back to the communities. And the counter argument goes somewhat along the following lines, that in the social and labor plans, the mining companies, as I think you've indicated a while ago, has to interact with the IDPs, integrated development plans of the councils. And the argument goes that they do, and that they then, these benefits go to council in general. In other words, it relates to an IDP issue, which is not directly linked or cannot be directly linked or is not on the face of it directly linked to that particular mine company doing business in that particular area. And hence, the argument goes that even if we do contribute, there is no direct link saying that the mining community is directly contributing to the immediate circumstances of the community. Now, I'd like your counter-argument to that, because that's the counter-argument to what you just said in respect to a direct link between how the mining company should benefit the community and why there's a poor community. But the other issue is, in your document, you state that ISCON and Sasol are examples of the larger corporations in the mineral sector that were owned by the state. But doesn't that fly counter your own proposal or your own possibility of a proposal saying, but let's look at a state-owned mining company, because Sasol and ISCON are exactly examples of mining companies financially very well off. So, you know, it runs kind of counter argument. I know you say it started off as a government institution, but the mere fact that they are successful is due to private enterprise, not due to being state-owned. In fact, those companies who have not been state-owned companies have not been privatized. Look at Transnet. Look at Eskom. Look, go through the list. They are in dire financial and management problems. So the two examples you list is a direct opposite of what we are trying to establish. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In response, which I think will be your final responses, you've made mention of the royalties. Recently we have come to know that Australia is working towards imposing what is called a resources tax, pegging it at 40%. I would like you to react to that. You know, should we continue with the royalties in the form, current form that they are in currently, or should we consider something along those lines of the Australian example, for example, of a resource tax? But the second issue, which is just a comment, that the terms that seem to be confusing you, Mr. Muloi, socialism, capitalism, and so forth, are very important terms, because they determine the structure of the economy. Because you can do all permutations, but if your structure of the economy is incorrectly based, then you will have challenges, serious challenges. For instance, when you talk socialism, you are immediately thinking about some form of a command economy. if you're talking about capitalism, you are thinking immediately of some form of free market economy, which is what has given us these problems that we have today. And then you have the whole loosely used term of mixed economy. We need to begin to interrogate these philosophical systems, because at the end, if we want to arrive at an ultimate answer beyond the mining and minerals industry, but broadly in the economy in the country, we need to look at what is it that is a problem. Because people always refer to structural problems within our economy, and what is that? So that we can that. But I'm not going to put you on the block now to react to that. I'm just flagging that, because as a country, we need to begin to talk to those so that we correct and find a lasting solution to these problems. But please respond to the questions posed.
Thank you, sir, for letting us off the hook on that one, because as business people, it would be difficult to engage on that. Certainly, there was this question of what do we say about nationalization, taking into account the South African geological potential. I think the presentation that SAMDA gave was an objective presentation that looked at what is possible, that looks at what has worked elsewhere, that looks at what hasn't worked, and that gives South Africa options to follow in case South Africa wanted to go down the route of a state-owned mining company. And certainly, we do not have a preference either way. Our view is that we are aware that there are successful state-owned mining companies, some of them are owned and operated by the state. There are certain companies where the state owns a share. There are companies where the state is a partner, like in Botswana and DBS. And all these different models work in different ways. And we're saying those are options. So we're just giving really an objective presentation without trying to push you in any one of the directions. And this is exactly the reason why we use Sasol and ISCO, because Sasol and ISCO were very successful state-owned mining companies, and in fact, that's why they were privatized. And certainly, from my point of view, is that the timing of that privatization was also very interesting, because it was just before the dawn of democracy and at the point in time when a particular economic agenda was being pushed in South Africa. But certainly, Sasol and ISCO are successful state-owned mining companies that have gone up to grow to be globally competitive companies. And this shows, in a way, that in whether a company is state-owned or is private-owned, if it's properly managed and properly resourced, it will succeed, irrespective of who the shareholders are. I think the question on Sawima is giving a presentation later, and maybe they will answer that in terms of how they deal with the issues. The issue of why communities are poorer. It's exactly the issue that we're dealing with, and those are some of the things that we're saying are the structural failures in terms of how, on one hand, we've got a very good piece of legislation, and on the other hand, in terms of how that piece of legislation is implemented, the benefits are not flowing through to the people that are the intended primary beneficiaries. And certainly the point that we are making is that it will be very important and beneficial moving forward that the way in which these laws and policies are implemented is in such a way that it benefits the people that are the intended beneficiaries. Okay, and again, I'll say the problem that you've raised with SLPs and IDPs again highlight the same point, that in terms of the social and labor plans, you've got a good piece of legislation and a good process of interaction between companies and communities where projects are supposed to be identified and those projects are going to have to be implemented for the benefit of the community. But somehow, in terms of the implementation of these things, it is not happening. So there is some kind of a failure in terms of how these things are brought together. And the guess is that failure reflects the failure of all the parties that are involved in that process. I think those are the questions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I know that your presentation has been quite interesting, and you are raising fundamental issues.
and that's why members keep on coming back. Shall we pass, honourable members? There seems to be a burning question here. Honourable Bigani, let's give you that opportunity. And ANC Youth League, can you please prepare yourselves? Are you going to use the... You want to speak to? Okay. Honourable Bigani?
Chair, my colleagues are just warning me your cut, so let me hold it. But I think it's important that I mention this. That now I'm still interested in knowing. Maybe my mind is a bit backwards this morning, I don't know. But I still want to hear more, even if it's not now. But it will be interesting to hear more from some that exactly who are they. It still doesn't bring out exactly who they are in terms of the presentation that they did. But more so, who do they represent? And if they are a vehicle for development, how do they contribute towards the growth and the prosperity of miners? If that could come out just in summary or more clearer, so that a person can get a better understanding of where do we stand in terms of understanding SAMDA, and SAMDA being part of what we are doing towards state-owned mines. It's fine, thanks.
Can you summarize that? Maybe she missed it, because these are business people. Please summarize yourself.
Maybe the simplest way I can put is that the mining industry has got two organizations that represent them. The one is the Chamber of Mines, and the Chamber of Mines will represent the established mining companies, and the other one is SAMDA, and the SAMDA will represent the emerging and the junior resource companies. So we are a body that represents the interests of those companies and lobby on their behalf and develop policy on their behalf and support them in various programs that we have. And certainly what we've done is that, as both Bridget and Nonkobela said, is that we extend our service and offering beyond just the members of SAMDA to the broader community that we think should benefit, particularly from the work and research that we develop and from our knowledge and experiences. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Let's thank you, SAMDA, for your submission and the responses that you have given. Surely this is not the last time that we interact with yourselves. As we have indicated at the beginning, we are starting a process that we will ensure as this parliament that we see it to its logical conclusion. So there might be a need that we call you back at some stage for further interactions. Thank you very much. Honourable members, shall we request the ANC Youth League to come closer. President, please bring all your delegation closer to you. I see some of them are sitting somewhere. I don't know whether they have deserted you. But then, welcome.
Not go closer to
introduce you,
Not closer to the DA. The DA is scared of the youth league.
Okay. They say you must not go. They say the DA is scared of the youth league. Is your delegation right where they are seated? Are you comfortable?
We've at least identified the ANC Youth League now.
Sorry?
No, I say at least we've identified the ANC Youth League where they are now.
Okay. Over to you, ANC Youth League. Introduce your delegation and address us.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Julius Malema, President of the ANC Youth League. I'm with Comrade Floyd, Floyd Shibambo, heading a political education and research unit of the ANC Youth League, but also a spokesperson. And we have been joined by comrades from the Tula Omar region, who heard that we are coming here to make an input on what has got a potential to change the living conditions of our people. And they felt that they needed to be part of this important meeting. Comrade Chair, we have made, Honorable Chair, Comrade Chair, yes. We have made...
don't doubt yourself. We are comrades.
Yeah.
As well as we are honorable members, so feel free.
We have made
people's parliament.
our written submission, and we'll try to speak to that. But before I go into what we have prepared, I just felt that quickly I need to respond to what is socialism, because I don't agree that, and Comrade Stalin will agree with me, that it is not a commanding economy, it is a democratic economy. Because once you say commanding, people get scared. It is a democratic economy, and some of the practices, of course, have made it to look like a commanding economy. And a capitalist economy is an evil system that promotes individualism and personal accumulation and wanting to maximize profit as individuals, as opposed to what the majority are benefiting. So, and the two, that's what makes the difference between the two. I'm not saying I'm a socialist, neither am I a capitalist. I'm a national democrat, very progressive nationalist. So, and that's what I represent. I pursue the interest of the National Democratic Revolution.
Can you hold on, please, yeah. President? Are you done, madam? Okay. All right, continue.
Thanks, Chair. South Africa is the richest country in the world because of its mineral deposit and reserves. And there is no credible research report in the entire world that disputes the fact that South Africa is rich with the strategic precious and industrial metals. We felt we need to make this point, but also to emphasize, Chair, that we are not economists, but neither are we mining experts. We are political activists, and we seek to make a political intervention in the economic crisis that is not benefiting our people. So whatever proposals we'll make, it will be proposals from activists who are trying to find a lasting solution in an economy that has failed to empower the majority of our people. South Africa is known throughout the world as a treasure trove, boast and abundance of mineral resources, producing and owning a significant proportion of the world's minerals. South Africa's wealth has been built on the country's vast resources, nearly 90% of the platinum metals on earth, 80% of the manganese, 73% of the chrome, 45% of vanadium, and 41% of gold. Only crude oil are not found in South Africa. The recent report outcomes by Citigroup confirms that South Africa is the richest country in the world with mineral deposits worth more than $2.5 billion. The richness of South Africa happens alongside high levels of poverty, unemployment, and massive inequalities. The single most important issue facing South Africa 16 years after the transition to democracy is breaking the grip of poverty on a substantial portion of its citizens. There is a consensus amongst economic and political analysts that approximately 40% of South Africans are living in poverty, with the poorest 15% in a disparate struggle to survive. This means that approximately 18 million out of 48 million people have not experienced the benefit of our newly found freedom. Young people are the most affected by the massive poverty and unemployment and inequality challenges. A substantial number of South Africans is poor and dependent on government-funded social grants. There are historical and real economic reasons why majority of our people continue to live in abject poverty in the sea of richness. Joblessness is one of the major contributors to poverty, starvation, and many other social ills. The South African economy continues to exclude a substantial number of our people while benefiting few previously advantaged individuals, and to be specific, white males. It is now common knowledge that the ANC Youth League has called for the country's mines to be nationalized, and as part of our political program for total economic emancipation in our lifetime. We said nationalization should be considered because it is the most practical way to open up opportunities for all South Africans create more jobs, develop the South African economy through beneficiation and industrialization of minerals. Our document for nationalization of mines includes a concrete proposal that the state should establish a state-owned mining company. We are aware that there is a difference between nationalization and establishment of the state-owned mining company. Parliament and the Department of Mineral Resources should correctly go ahead with efforts to establish a state-owned mining company, and nationalization of mines will be resolved on a different platform. The state currently owns Petro SA, but it does not mean that the whole of the petroleum gas fuel industry is nationalized, and the same applies to SAA, SABC, and other state-owned enterprises. That is the reason why we are here to input substantively on the establishment of the state-owned mining company and nationalization. We will discuss and resolve in the ANC because it is on the agenda of the ANC. The ANC Youth League is of a view that a state-owned mining company should be established and the state plays a far much greater role in the extraction, beneficiation, production, industrialization and trade of mineral resources. But we also believe that the state-owned mining company can do the following: increase the budget of the state for social development purposes, e.g. health, education, rural development, fight against crime, and job creation. Lay a very firm basis for the economies, for the country's minerals to be locally beneficiated and industrialized. Change the South African economy from over-dependence and reliance of exporting of natural resources and importing of finished goods and services. Create new economic centers of development outside of Johannesburg, Durban, and Cape Town. Could improve the working condition and salaries of mine workers. The government revenue that is generated from taxes will not be able to build better lives for all South Africans. Government cannot solely rely on taxes to deliver better services to majority of our people. South Africa will not be able to deal with the housing backlog, free education access, better health care, safety and security, employment of particularly youth if we are not in control of the key and strategic sectors of the South African economy. The wealth of South Africa should benefit all who live in it. It's an open secret that ordinary workers in mines are the least beneficiaries of mining in South Africa, either as recipients of salaries and stakeholders in mining. Mine workers in South Africa are underpaid and work under difficult conditions and unsafe mines. Their workplaces and socio-economic existence exposes these workers to fatal diseases and accidents. Nationalized mines should be beacon of safer working environments and better conditions, as they will not be in narrow pursuit of profit at the expense of community and human development. With state ownership and control of mineral resources, South Africa will be able to attract industrial investors who will contribute to the growth of economy, transfer skills, education, and expertise to locals and give them sustainable jobs. It can never be correct that absolute majority of minerals we produce is exported to other countries with very little efforts to build internal capacity to beneficiate these minerals. Nationalization of mines will lead to greater local beneficiation, industrialization, growth of the economy, jobs for majority of our people. The industrial strategy adopted by government will never succeed unless we have the state control and ownership of natural resources. We need metals, iron ore, gold, platinum, coal, chrome, manganese, and many other minerals to industrialize. South Africa's skills development efforts should be dynamic and not exclusively linked to the industrialization of minerals wealth. Although related to the above component, it is important to highlight the fact that South African economy as it is currently stands bears no features of all colonial economies. Primarily, all colonial economies were positioned as sources and reserves for primary goods and service for the colonizers' economies. Post-political independence, many if not all post
colonial economies continue to function and operate in the same manner colonizers designed them. Exporters of primary commodities and commodities and importers of finished goods and services. This pattern has a direct impact on sustainability of post-colonial economies as they are heavily reliant on the demand of their goods and services by former colonizers and bigger market economies. Nationalized mines ought to lead to spatial development framework that should necessarily decentralize development. Areas such as Sekhukhune, Rustenburg, Burgersfort, Emalahleni have far greater economic potential because of mineral resources underneath the soil. This should be deliberately developed, beneficiated, and industrialized to enhance and harness economic and human development in these territories. What is to be done? We propose, Comrade Chair, that all mineral rights should be transferred to the state-owned mining company, which will from time to time make partnership with private corporations, where the state will hold a minimum of 60% shares, and for the remainder of the 40%, the private corporation should pay royalties and tax. The state should impose a moratorium on the provision of mineral rights and new mechanism development on how new licenses should be issued to the state-owned mining company. The state-owned mining company should be established and be built under the direct supervision of the Department of Mineral Resources, not public enterprise, and fundamentally responsible for the following tasks. Own and control South Africa mineral resources, maximize the nation's economic gain from the mineral resources, contribute to South Africa's social economic development, develop and maintain strong environmental and safety standard and develop mineral resources in a careful and deliberate manner. Develop strategies for skills development in the mining sector, including through establishment of mining colleges for low, intermediary, and high-intensive skills development of all people. The state-owned mining company should be established through the Act of Parliament, which should clearly define its task, responsibility, and accountability mechanism. A state-owned mining company should necessarily gather all the stakes' interests in mining, including those in Alexcor, African Exploration Mining, Finance Corporation, and various other stakes which government holds through provincial parastatals and shares in bigger mining corporations. A minimum of 60% of the mineral resources extracted by the state-owned mining company should be locally beneficiated and industrialized, and 50% of such beneficiation and industrialization of minerals should happen in mining communities. Strong accountability mechanisms should be instituted to guide how those who work for state-owned mining companies do not redirect its resources into their individual benefit and progress. Strong community involvement and national accountability forum on the management of the mining resources. There should be an annual stakeholders mining conference to discuss the direction and content of the state-owned mining company activities, including finances and community development programs. Those involved in the running of the state-owned mining company should be closely monitored and processed for honestly purposes. Assessment of state-owned mining company should include all employees of the company. The state-owned mining company will, within a broader mineral strategy, ensure that all beneficiation and industrialization of minerals benefits all people. Importantly, the state-owned mining company should attract the best of skills, expertise, and knowledge on how best minerals are extracted, produced, beneficiated, and traded for the mineral resources in South Africa. A state-owned mining company should necessarily operate differently to how state-owned enterprises such as Eskom, Transnet, SAA, and etc. operate. The fundamental difference will be that it will not be run like a private business corporation whose extent of progress is solely measured through the amount of profit generated.
The state-owned mining company progress should be measured as per its ability, capacity, and coherent determination to create jobs. Maximization of the country's gain from the mineral resources, contribute to socio-economic development and assistance of communities where mining happens. The Department of Mineral Resources annual South African Minerals Industry says, as a major mining country, South Africa's strengths include a high level of technical and production expertise as well as comprehensive research and development skills. South African universities continue to produce mining engineers and skilled strategic leaders of both the private and public sector. The question will have to be how the state channels the expertise into state-owned mining companies. Developing countries like Venezuela is looking up to South Africa for expertise and skills to mine. The state should channel these capabilities and expertise to useful outcomes in the state-owned mining company. State-owned PetroSA is a good lesson and comparison to the state-owned mining company because it is state-owned and does business in a highly competitive environment of oil. PetroSA is currently building a 400,000 barrel per day oil refinery in Kuga, and it is state-owned. Sustainable socio-economic development and historical justice. This parliament should responsibly use the political power it holds on behalf of the people to exert progressive change. The 16 years of South Africa's democratic dispensation has come with lots of challenges, but also lots of lessons on how better the state can change people's lives for the better. South Africa remains one of the most unequal societies in the world, with massive unemployment and poverty challenges, and the key towards unlocking such lies with the will of the people, which has been temporarily given to this parliament. We therefore have a responsibility to change society for the better and ensure that all South Africans share in the country's wealth. Mineral resources are non-renewable resources, and the further we extract these resources, the further we deplete South Africa's potential wealth and strategic economic importance and significance in the world economy. It is therefore the responsibility of this parliament to ensure that minerals wealth is utilized in an environmentally friendly fashion and economically durable manner for the benefit of all people. All the big mining corporations that are currently benefiting from South Africa's wealth were built on the foundation of poor people's sweat and blood as cheap laborers, slaves, and underpaid workers in the mine. Like Parliament did when adopting Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act in 2002, we believe that this Parliament will be decisive and pass the Act of Parliament establishing the state-owned mining company. The people of South Africa shall share in the country's wealth. The mineral wealth beneath the soil, monopoly industries and banks should be transferred to the ownership of the people as a whole. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there an addition from your delegation, President?
Come in.
An addition from your delegation?
What?
No, we. I think that most of the issues have been clarified. I'm sure we'll respond to some of the questions that are going to arise.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, before we engage with this submission, let's take a strictly 10-minute tea. The tea is outside. When we come back, we then engage with the submission and move on. Thank you.